This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mark and Kitchen.
Here's the deal. If Paul Pierce said to me, I think I was a better player than Dwayne Wade, meaning a better talent as a scorer or whatever, I wouldn't agree with him, but I wouldn't be offended by it. I wouldn't be. What I would tell you, however, is this. Where Paul Pierce was absolutely blasphemous is to say his career was better. You did not have a better career. It's two different categories. You did not have a better career than Dwayne Wade.
Well, you wouldn't let me in, so I thought you were in trouble.
Well, we're not.
But you called me Bert. That's our code word for danger.
We don't have a code word.
We don't?
As to whether or not D-Wade was one of the top five players in all of basketball, Paul Pierce was never a part of that discussion, ever. He was an all-star. He was a closer. He's a Hall of Famer.
You believe that? You see what he did?
It's on.
Oh, yeah. He's going down. Right after we finish playing Funnel Nuts.
On Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
But when you talk about accuracy, when you talk about the clutch performances, the playoff performances, all the wins, on-field skill, how many MVPs does he have? Three. That combined with what he's been able to do in those locker rooms and the culture he has been able to create, you can make the argument he is the greatest team athlete in the history of sports and the greatest athlete in the history of sports.
Think Brady is better in the clutch, clutch.
We're going to play sandlot football. Jennings, you're going to run a 15-yard dig. Devontae Adams, Jordy Nelson, you're going to run a 7-yard slant. And you do this, like, you know, drawing it on your chest, saying, hey, all right, go up 5 yards, cut in, then cut out.
Give me something to hit.
All right, Em, this is my heater. I dare you to hit it.
You'll be sorry.
Now, it's time for Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Coming at ya!
All right, final hour of the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI. Mark Dondero, Ben Kitchen, leading you up to Red Sox pregame. Sox and Orioles today from Fenway Park. Red Sox trying to bounce back from a bad loss yesterday with Rick Porcello on the mound. But we're not talking about baseball right now. We're talking football. Ben?
Yes.
Some moves being made by the Patriots, not being made by the Patriots. They lost Chris Hogan. They re-signed Pat Chung. What do you like? What don't you like? What are your thoughts on the football team?
Well, I like bringing Chung back for a short deal like that. I think he's a very valuable piece. He's been an excellent player since he's returned from Philadelphia. Before that, it was questionable at best. I like that. It gives you a little continuity back there. There's certain parts of the field where you need that continuity. So I like that move. The signing of Austin Seferian Jenkins, it's fine as a stopgap, a one-year deal. Maybe you draft the next tight end early in this draft, and he spends 1 year trying to figure his way into the offense, carve his path, and be the second tight end and maybe take over that role.
Yeah,
Seferian Jenkins brings them some things that are valuable to this team. He's not a bad pass catcher. He's not a great pass catcher. He's a decent run blocker, which I think we know that this offense is hedging a little more, bit more towards the run as they did last year, and they're probably going to do a little bit more of it this year. So I like it as a stopgap, but, I mean, they have – who the hell is Tom Brady going to throw the ball to outside of Julian Edelman right now? I mean, I don't mind Chris Hogan being gone, going to Carolina. He was a non-factor last year.
Yeah.
An absolute non-factor. But I still look at your offensive weapons surrounding Brady and say, okay, I like what you got at the running back situation. You're fine right there. But who's going to catch the ball from the wide receiving standpoint other than Edelman? Who's going to get open? Is Edelman even going to be able to be what Edelman was before without another option like Gronk taking away focus? And I don't think he will.
That's a difficult question to answer right now.
Well, you just kind of look at it and go, all right, it's going to be easier for teams to game plan against Edelman without the presence of Rob Gronkowski there. Even if Gronk's not great, you still know you still have to game plan against him. So I don't love the situation they're in right now. Time will tell. We'll see what they do at the draft. Maybe they make a trade and bring in a higher profile wide receiver. Maybe they draft a wide receiver early, which I don't really want them to do. I'd rather you package some assets together and go get a true number one wide receiver.
Tom Curran had an interesting piece on NBCSportsBoston.com this week. I think it was Tom Curran, where he was breaking down why the Patriots don't draft wide receivers, why they don't draft them well, why they don't draft them, and it was interesting. It's just hard to predict league-wide, but especially inside the Patriots war room, it's hard to predict. And Bill Belichick admitted it as much this week during his pre-draft press conference, I think, or he's admitted it in the past. It's hard to admit or predict that these guys are going to perform to the level that you want them to perform to at the NFL level. It's just the way college football is, the way the passing game
in college football is.
It's
more about the passing game in college football versus the passing game in pro football, even though we see teams that, quote-unquote, run a pro-style offense. They really don't. So when you're trying to gauge what a wide receiver's production level will be in the next level into the NFL, it's really hard to take what they did in college and try and, you know, extrapolate it over to the next level. It doesn't really work that well. We've seen plenty of these high-profile guys in college be absolute busts in the pros at that position.
Yep.
And I think Belichick has said, maybe it was even in that Curran piece, pretty much echoed that. Like, I don't really like the college passing game. It doesn't translate well. So it's a lot harder to scout these guys and to figure out what they can bring you to the next level because they don't have to think nearly as much.
One of the things Bill Belichick said, this was actually an interaction they had back in 2001.
Mm.
Belichick or Curran stopped Belichick outside the locker room and asked him quick something about the receiving class and what they had or what they looked at. And Belichick basically said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but Richard Seymour's you can't get for the most part in the middle of the second round. He was like, who's the best receiver rookie-wise in the league this year? Chris Chambers.
Mm.
Chris Chambers was like a second-round pick.
Yeah, and there were some high-profile guys, I think, coming out of college in that draft at wide receiver, and I don't think too many of them ever truly panned out the way Richard Seymour did. He's right. How are you going to find that type of player, Richard Seymour-esque player on the defensive line in the third, fourth round? We've seen
usually you don't.
Track record has proven that wide receivers, you can find them any round, sometimes not even at the draft, Julian Edelman. Welker? Was Welker undrafted?
Seventh round.
He was seventh round?
Yeah.
You can find great wide receivers. You can also overreach on a wide receiver in the first round and be a complete bust. However, the other side of that, too, is I think it was in War Room, Michael Hawley's book,
mm-hmm.
where the anecdote about Thomas Dimitroff calling Belichick, getting his opinion on Julio Jones, and he said, no. Don't draft him here. You can get this guy. I can't remember the other player he was referencing, but you can get him much later, and he's the same player. So that also tells me he's not great at evaluating that position on top of it not necessarily being easy to evaluate that position.
I don't know if that was War Room, because War Room, I think, came out before Julio Jones came out.
Patriot Rain did.
I'm thinking of Patriot Rain. Maybe I'm thinking of Patriot
Rain. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was War Room.
Okay. I think, yeah, I'm thinking of Patriot Rain. He wrote two books.
I'll text him.
That was obviously a misstep by Bill in that evaluation. But I don't have a problem with them doing what they've been doing. I mean, it's worked. It's worked. Welker worked. Amendola worked. Did Chris Hogan work? I say Chris Hogan worked.
Yeah.
It wasn't to the extent of Welker or Amendola necessarily,
no.
But
he was
it worked.
Very serviceable for 2 years.
Yeah. He was huge. He took over, essentially, the AFC Championship game a few years back against Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Was big in the Super Bowl against the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what he did in the Super Bowl against the Eagles. Did he have a good game in that game?
I don't remember.
But he made some big catches down. Now, this year wasn't good, but he made some big catches down the stretch against the Chiefs.
Yep.
The biggest thing, Super Bowl, he was okay. So that worked.
The biggest thing they'll miss about him is his downfield blocking. He's a very good blocker for a wide receiver, and that's obviously very important to the Patriots. They will miss that.
Yeah.
But, man, if we're just banking on Josh Gordon being back here and being better than he was last year, that's a dangerous proposition.
Yeah.
Dangerous proposition.
The Chung thing is fine. I like it. There's so much continuity with that secondary. I enjoy that, but at the same time, playmakers are always nice. But I don't know. It's worked. They made plays in the Super Bowl. So at this point, I'll put my hands up and say, hey, do your thing. Bring Chung back. Belichick loves Chung. I like Chung. He's a good communicator. Everybody knows what they're doing back there.
He's reliable.
I mean, I'll take it now. So,
my biggest issue with the Seferian Jenkins thing is that he's never played a full season. Mm-hmm. I think only once has he ever played double-digit games in a season. Is he going to be available for you November?
I don't want to deal with an injury-prone tight end a la Gronk when the guy doesn't have Gronk-like skills.
Agreed.
Now, you're talking about a guy. I mean, Gronk, you're not going to replace Gronk. Anybody brought in after Gronk is going to be tough to really embrace because it's after Gronk. But I don't mind the signing. I mean, this is a guy that he's not that old. He's athletic. He can catch. He's done some things against the Patriots before. So we'll see. I like it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I think he'll be serviceable. I'd like to see them draft a tight end relatively high. I don't know. I don't read a million mock drafts. I don't scout all these college players. So I'm not entirely sure if there's true top talent, first round talent at the tight end position, but I'd like to see them take one high and start to work on that as that next player, to replace Gronk, because Seferian Jenkins is just a stopgap.
That would be, but again, I don't know where their head is at in terms of, are they going to try to replace Gronk? Are they going to try to find somebody that can conjure up that kind of continuity with Tom Brady, that young Tom Brady playing in his age 42 season? It's going to be really tough to do.
Yeah. There's only one receiver, quote unquote, that's in the circle of trust. It's Edelman.
I don't know if you try to draft a guy and hope he's Deion Branch. I mean, I'd still say there's a chance that they can get a decent core of wide receivers out there. It's just I don't know where it comes from now.
I would rather them package some picks together and get a top-flight wide receiver via trade 100%. Than actually draft one. I don't want to see them draft. I think this offense is too complicated for certain rookies, and takes them a little too long to get. How long was Julian Edelman here in the system, playing various roles before he really got the opportunity as a wide receiver? It was a couple of years.
Well, let me ask you. A couple of years. He was in the Giants facility in 2013. The spring of 2013, he was visiting the Giants. I don't remember. You can tell me what you remember. I don't remember. I knew I wanted to keep him, but do you remember being like, oh, we cannot lose this guy?
No, I wasn't like, we cannot lose this guy. I always liked him. I like players like that are skilled and very versatile, that have the opportunity to serve multiple roles on your team and be productive in those roles. I like those guys. They're very hard to find. I don't remember if that was before or after he had some time playing cornerback. I think that was after.
2011 after, yeah.
Okay, so it was 2 years after. Well,
let me just say this real quick. I think part of the reason I felt that way maybe was because Wes Welker was still here and there's only so many passes that go out. So I don't think he probably would have been poised to contribute, but Welker was here. So they didn't get a chance to get him the ball as often because Welker was established. He had done the job. He was a good player. And then when he left and went to Denver, I think that's when Edelman really was able to shine through.
Yeah, he slid right into that role. In some way, in some fashion, did some things better than Welker.
Yeah.
Not most of them, but there was a couple of ways he was a little bit better than an improvement over Welker.
Oh, definitely. Not just with his on-field production, but the way the mentality, the way he, he was just a feisty, tenacious kind of guy. That helped them.
Yeah, I mean, he was, once he had the ball in his hands, he was better than Welker.
Yeah.
Welker had a canny ability to get open. Not that Julian Edelman doesn't. He's great at it. Welker was special at that.
Yeah, I would take Julian Edelman over Wes Welker. Just on athleticism alone, Julian Edelman, Wes Welker. Edelman made the catches that Wes Welker couldn't make in the Super Bowls.
Can't really argue there.
Yeah. There's no Wes Welker was a great player, but just not even close to Julian Edelman.
Are you upset they brought back Gostkowski?
No,
that's to me. That's
what else were you going to do at this point?
None.
He's had some heartaches associated with his career, but they've won the games.
Overall,
you know,
he's been very reliable.
He's made the field goals. It hasn't always been smooth. You don't feel great.
Yeah, he hasn't really cost you.
No,
all that much.
No, he hasn't cost you. Has he really? The only time he really, I think, cost you, arguably, was the AFC Championship game in Denver. When he missed that extra point,
yeah,
that was the only time where it really cost you. Now he might have gotten bailed out a few times, but in terms of
he definitely got bailed out.
And he has hit some big kicks.
He has.
They've looked ugly, but it doesn't matter as long as you hit them. Whatever. Development at the Masters, and I don't have a hole. Tiger Woods.
Excuse me.
I don't have what hole they're on right now. It's not showing me. But Tiger Woods just made birdie.
Ooh.
And Francesco Molinari just made bogey, and I think both might be in some trouble off the tee on the seventh hole, I want to say. So it is now a one-shot lead for Molinari. It was three. He's at minus 12. Tiger's at minus 11, I believe. They don't have the leaderboard up, but it is a one-shot lead at the Masters. This is the Martin Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEI.
We're back to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Patrick Marleau back the other way. Oh, he gets hit hard by DeBrus. Wiped out right at the Bruin pitch.
And that'll be the end of Kadri there. It's the hit was not called on Marleau, but it was a reaction of Kadri that drew the arm up of Brad Meyer immediately. And Chara's going over to check on him. A reactionary play as Marleau went down, but you got another injured Bruin. Is that Grizzly there? He's gone. Brad Meyer's kicking Kadri right out. Oh, it's DeBrus.
DeBrus made the hit on Marleau, and Kadri went right after him.
Boy, those two have just been at it tooth and nail. But here's the hard hit.
I always get confused when I hear Jim Houston. Is it Jim Houston who calls the hockey for TSN or whatever that Canada? He was the voice of Triple Play Baseball 2001 on PlayStation.
Mm.
So whenever I hear his voice, I'm like, what is he doing calling hockey? He's a baseball guy. But no, he's actually a hockey guy. I think he was in a hockey video game too. Whatever. Bruins tie up the series with the Leafs last night. 1-1. How do you feel about this series right now? Did anything change based on the performance last night coming out of the performance the Bruins put forth in game one?
Well, yeah, they played like a team, capital T team, mm-hmm. in game two. They were sloppy. They were uninspired in game one. No one looked good, really. Really, no one looked all that good in game one. Who looked bad last night for the Bruins? You know, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
They, not exactly sure who said it after the game, but they talked about, we played as a family. Played as a family tonight. We looked after each other. We played for each other. They didn't do that in game one. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference. If this team plays like that, they're going to be very hard to beat. And then who knows? I mean, Tampa's down 2-0 in the series to the Blue Jackets.
Going back to Columbus, I think.
Yeah. I still trust Tampa to get out of
that
series.
You know, I
look back,
and there are a fair amount of instances where, especially the cup champion, now I'm not saying they're going to win the cup,
yeah.
but I've seen instances where the cup champion has been down 2-0 a couple times, once, twice, and they get out of it,
mm-hmm.
especially against an early round opponent. I would be shocked if they go down 3-0. That's a different situation. I mean,
yeah, you better need to pull the Philadelphia Flyers 2009 out of your ass, whatever year that was.
I mean, it's pretty incredible they're in this position because we're talking about like a mid-90s Red Wings team, like some of those juggernauts. That's how good this Lightning team was.
Yeah, but so I feel a lot better about the Bruins moving forward, especially since we believe that Kadri might miss the entire rest of the series.
It's definitely in play.
You know, 3 to 5 games, my guess. He got 3 last year, possibly 5 this year. Seemed to make sense for a repeat offender, for going exactly against what the player safety department wants you to do. They don't want retaliatory dirty hits like that.
And it was bad, too. It was a cross-check to the head.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Awful. The kid's good, so I'm glad he's not going to be there. It makes it a lot easier for the Bruins to move forward through this series. Plus, I mean, I don't think, did we expect Toronto to have Casper the Ghost again after last year?
I didn't.
In Austin Matthews?
Yeah, I didn't.
You know, you keep him in check, you're fine. But what really impressed me about what the Bruins did last night was they frustrated the hell out of the Maple Leafs. They got them on tilt. You know, it wasn't just Kadri and that hit. It was, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he was, you know, in Tuca's face, hitting Tuca all the time, Tavares.
John Tavares.
And, you know, they were very frustrated. They're a team that once you get them frustrated, they kind of fall apart at the seams. Mm-hmm. So keep doing what you've been doing, you know, or keep doing what you did in game two. Continue that trend moving forward. The other thing I want to see from Cassidy is, again, learn from game two and learn from game one. Don't try to react to them. Force the issue. Make them react to you. Make them have to adjust to what you're doing. Don't try and play catch up all the time trying to figure out what they're doing and say, okay, no, I need this line out here then. Mm-hmm. No. Just play the best line that you have at that time for you and move forward and let them adjust to you.
This series has gone basically the way I thought it would go. I'm used to seeing the Bruins somewhat being inconsistent because I think that's a product of the goalie. Now, I'm not going to crush Tuca. I didn't crush Tuca. But I think that there is an element to, hey, he's good and they win. He's bad and they lose.
Yeah.
Or he's not great and they lose. So we'll see what happens. It's interesting to me that, again, if they lose game three, they're down 2-1 and they've never won a series trailing 2-1 with Tuukka Rask. That would be an interesting scenario to me. I don't know if it's going to happen. I'll predict they win game two or game three because I think they're going to win the series. And if they win game three, that would sort of follow the script that I'm following. They win these games if they win the series. So I'm going to say they win game three and Tuukka plays well enough. We'll see how it goes because he was good in game two,
mm-hmm.
and they need to carry that over. But yeah, I like the physicality they played with last night. I think they have more offense than Toronto has defense.
Yeah.
So that's it's the way I thought it was going to go.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder how much consistency you can get from David Backes moving forward because he played outstanding last night.
It's a big X factor.
You know, how many hits did he have? 8 hits, an assist.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said he could do and wanted to do in the last couple of weeks of the season. He's wanted to transition into that just to make sure he gets on the ice. And if he keeps doing that, he gets plenty of ice time. He was fantastic. I thought Tuukka was really good last night. And obviously, Marchand got the first start of the game. He was, you know, doing Marchand things. Mm-hmm. I think they're in good position. I think they're going to win this series if Kadri's out for the rest of the series, regardless. If he's out for 3 more games, 4 more games, whatever it is, I think they win this series without too much of an issue. Because I think after this game, you're going to look at a Toronto team that's going to come out and try and fly on you in home ice, mm-hmm. and try and do what they did to you in game one. But you keep doing what you're doing. Be physical with them. Push them around. Get them frustrated. The rest of the series should be, I don't want to say easy, but shouldn't be all that difficult. Shouldn't. Once you frustrate them, they fall apart. They go on tilt. They make stupid, rash decisions and get themselves in trouble. Just play your brand of hockey. Don't try and react to them.
I mean, if they ever got a big-time break and saw Tampa knocked out.
Yeah, what do you think about if Tampa gets knocked out, what do you think about the Bruins' chances moving forward?
Well, I like them. They've had some issues with the Blue Jackets before, especially out there, but I'm not going to pick them over the Bruins.
Yeah.
I'm just not. That division wasn't nearly as good. The Bruins are better. I mean, if they get knocked out, that's a big hurdle. That's huge. So I don't understand why the NHL seeds their teams like this, where the Bruins and Lightning would face each other in the second round, not the conference finals, but whatever.
I mean, who's the team in the East then that concerns you?
Well,
Washington?
I'm always concerned with Washington, yeah. Just based on history.
Yeah,
and they have
your number.
Champs. Yeah.
Ever since we sent Adam Oates there, they have our number.
They've never had a lot of success against Braden Holtby, like, or in the past, and they just don't play well. They just, you never have good.
it feels like you never have good fortune against that team. They always find a way to lose. So I never like that matchup, but I'm not going to just say they can't beat them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they could lose Kadri for the rest of the series. I think that's really possible.
Well, I think they probably should, considering this is a guy with a long history of scumbaggery in the league. You know, I heard the comments after he thought, you know, there was a knee-to-knee on that earlier hit.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Knee-to-knees, if you're delivering a knee-to-knee, you're an idiot because you could blow out your own knee doing that. Mm-hmm. I think that's dumb. I think he kind of jumped into the hit and it changed the trajectory of it, made it become a knee-on-knee situation when it really wouldn't have been if he didn't leave his feet. And then he just went scumbag mode. You know, there was a clean hit on Marlowe, vicious hit.
Perfectly. I know it was up against sort of the end of the boards there, so it made it look a little worse.
That curved
it was a
corner.
Clean hit. Yeah.
It was clean. And Marlowe got right up. Marlowe got right up.
Yeah.
And then Kadri just went and targeted him. Stick high. Scumbag move. You know, I kind of agree with what Kalman wrote on WEEI.com. I want to see him get his comeuppance. I don't really want to see him suspended. I want to see Char kick his ass next game and beat him down. I do too, but I'd rather see the Bruins advance than one guy get his ass kicked. I'd rather see the Bruins have the easier path to advance because I will not remember a first round incident like this moving forward. I'll remember a Bruins team that went further in the playoffs. So I'd rather see Kadri out because he's a very talented player.
Who do you give the advantage to on the goalie side? After two games,
I'd give it. It's probably a push, but I'd go maybe slight advantage for Tuukka. Slight.
I guess. I mean, they won the last game.
I thought Tuukka was better last night than Anderson was in game one.
I'll go Tuukka because I will because he. Look, do I think he could have saved a couple of those breakaways?
Yeah.
Yes, but they still were breakaways.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll
he was
go
put in a terrible position. Over and over in that game.
Yeah.
You know, they were so sloppy. The defense was so slow in game one. And they were so sloppy on the other end of the ice. Just giving the puck away, allowing Marner to just go. Like that penalty shot? I don't blame Tuukka for that.
No, I know.
That was a great shot by him. It was a great deke.
Typically, guys on penalty shots score about 34% of the time. On breakaways, it's about 28% of the time. That's roughly 1 in 3. He gave up 2 straight, 2 of 3. You'd like stick with the averages there. I'm not going to crush him, but hey, stick with the averages, please. But again, they were breakaways, so I'll give him the nod. He won the last game, the most recent game. I'll give him the nod. But this is, I'm telling you, this is a must win as it can get for a game three if you're the Boston Bruins. In any sport, I know it's we like to throw that out there and that line out there, and it's not always, it's
what,
not
must
a must win?
Win.
It's not a must win. But if you go by the trends, must win, you know, they don't come back and win those series when they're down 2-1. So I don't know what you want me to say.
I want you to have some positivity, some optimism in your life right now as it pertains to Tuukka Rask and the Boston Bruins.
I'm optimistic they can win this series. I worry about the long haul of – I mean, the Stanley Cup playoffs is a grind. It's a grueling grind.
It feels like a six-month exercise.
Not like NBA playoffs. That feels like a completely different season.
Yeah, it's weird. NBA playoffs, I love it, but it doesn't have that same feel to it.
Yeah.
You know, there isn't that same type of urgency in the NBA playoffs as there are in the NHL playoffs. There's just not. I don't know why.
In the NBA playoffs?
Yeah, it just doesn't feel as urgent.
Yeah, but, well, I think part of that is because there's no upsets. You kind of know who's going to win.
Yeah, so I mean, for the most part, you kind of do. Especially in the first round, there's very few. There's only been a small handful of eights beating ones in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
Like three off the top of my head, Nuggets and like 94 over the Supersonics. And
that was because it was a 5-game series, so that played a role.
Yes, that absolutely did play a role. And then you had, I think, the Warriors with Baron Davis and Steven Jackson took out the Mavs in round one. That could be a knock against Dirk in our argument. Maybe the Knicks did?
What was that, Mavs, Steve Nash, Michael Finley Mavs?
No.
No.
No, that was Dirk Mavs.
Okay.
That was all Dirk. Finley might have been there. I don't know. And maybe the 99 Knicks? They were a lower-rated seed.
I don't think they were an 8 seed. They got to the finals as an 8 seed?
Or 6. I don't remember. It was a strike-shortened season. It was the dark days of the NBA.
Yeah.
the post-Jordan, for like 4 years. It was just, ugh.
Yeah.
This league sucks right now.
It did. It did. But that's, I mean, we could look right now and I could probably tell you who's going to win each series. So
I just thought of something.
Yeah.
So earlier we had the conversation and we were talking off air about the Dirk Wade, who would you start your team with? And we're like, oh, Wade's the third best shooting guard of all time. You know who I'd take over him? And I love this guy and most wouldn't agree with me, but I'll take him. And he's a shooting guard. He's not a point guard. I'll take Allen Iverson. Prime Allen Iverson. I'll take him. Led a bad 76ers team to the finals. Great player.
Yeah.
Absolute bulldog. Loved him. Not the defensive player that Dwayne Wade was.
No.
Absolutely not.
He had a lot of steals, but he didn't shut down guys.
No.
He wasn't big enough. No. That's interesting.
I'll take prime Allen Iverson. I don't know. I've always been infatuated with Allen Iverson. Smaller guy that can do what he could do. It always captured my imagination. But
if I'm starting a team, I'll take Wade. But I liked Allen Iverson. I liked Allen Iverson better than I liked Dwayne Wade. I'll just take Iverson.
I don't, like I said last week when we were talking about the Paul Pierce saying he had a better career, I don't like Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
I don't like him. He had a better career than Paul Pierce.
He did.
That was idiotic from Paul Pierce.
He did.
Absolutely idiotic. And I love Paul Pierce. I love Paul Pierce, and I really don't like Dwayne Wade. I'll take Dwayne Wade.
Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
We're back to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
All right, back here on the Mark and Kitchen Show, Tiger Woods wrapping up the front nine here. He's on the ninth, minus 12, one back of Francesco Molinari. Just shot one from the fairway, doesn't appear to like it. It's not near the hole, not terrible. Not near the hole. But he's only one back. Him and Molinari exchange birdies on the eighth. So we'll see what happens. Tiger in great position. He is alone in second place. Brooks Koepka is lurking. Molinari about to make the approach. Here's what I want to ask you. You just walked in. You said, come on, Tiger. Three birdies in a row.
Yeah.
Here's what I want to know.
And I have don't my ask theory. Me for golf advice.
No, but I have my own theories. But why does everybody want to see Tiger win? Why is that? Why is it a nostalgic thing? Like, why is everybody I mean, why? The comeback?
That's, I think, more of it than anything. We love, at least in this country, we love to build you up, tear you down, just to build you up again. And this is the build-up. This is the rebuild for Tiger. And they like that story. And for a lot of people, you have to keep in mind, Tiger's the only reason they ever watch the sport. For me, you know, I'm not a huge golf fan.
Yep.
I would typically watch a little bit of Sundays of majors. And if something was fascinating going on, if you had a little bit of a duel going on, yeah, I'll stay till the end. But if Tiger's playing, I'm inherently more interested because of this generation, he's the greatest, right?
Yeah, no, without question.
You know, since who? Jack, maybe?
Easily.
Okay.
And some people would say, despite the major total, he's greater than Jack. He's better than Jack.
Okay. You know, I'll always take victories.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But... That's a major part of it. Is
four
that
more victories too? Not
for a
one.
Lot of people, he was the only reason to watch the sport, myself included. I'll be honest about that. I was never all that interested until Tiger came around.
Why? What about Tiger made you interested?
I don't know. The story was fascinating. It was different. And at that time, what was it 97 when he first won his first major?
April of 97.
Okay. He was black in a predominantly white sport.
Yep.
He was incredibly young. He was a prodigy.
He was a prodigy.
All of those things are interesting. He was breaking down a barrier in one of the sports that's had a pretty bad history with racism. You know, overall, the game, the sport of golf, has kind of had a bad problem with that.
And it's amazing. I'm still a little surprised at now that we can talk about it 22 years later. There's still not a lot of African Americans playing golf.
No.
And now, what there are, Brooks Koepka, guys like that, there are more athletes that play golf now. Tiger made golf cooler,
Oh, he absolutely made it cooler.
But where? So those athletes aren't as prone to avoiding golf because he made it cooler. But where are all the African Americans? I'm surprised. I'm a little surprised that more haven't gravitated towards the game because of Tiger. You would have thought if that happened, you know, 2000, 99, 2000, 01, when he was at his peak,
yeah,
now would be the time, right? We'd see them. They would have been 10, 8, 7 back then. 20 years later, they'd be 25.
I mean,
27.
He is single-handedly the reason for the boom in popularity of the sport. Single-handedly. He's the most famous golfer ever. Without a doubt, I don't care what anyone says about some of the names of the past. It's not even close. It's Tiger Woods 7 miles than everyone else.
Yeah. I'm just trying to
figure- video games for younger yep. kids were a huge deal, got them into the sport. Guys your age and my age picked up clubs for the first time, likely because of Tiger.
I'm just trying to figure out why everybody's rooted for him.
Well, what is the thing? Here's the other side of it, too.
I just want to be a part of seeing the story.
He's not a murderer.
No.
He's not a guy who broke the law. He cheated on his wife. I don't care. I'm not in that relationship. Why do I care?
Yeah.
He liked to sleep around. Okay. It wasn't really that bad. Everyone got bent out of shape for nothing because they saw this guy as a paragon of virtue for some reason. Didn't realize he was human, and then he does something like that, and everyone wants to kill him for it. And then I think some time went by, and they realized we overreacted as a society. We buried this guy. Why? Why? Cheat on his wife. I don't care. That doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
When I say it doesn't mean anything to me, I don't know the guy. I don't know his wife. I don't care. It's not a big deal. He didn't murder someone. He didn't sexually assault someone that we know of. He didn't rob a bank.
It was a big scandal, though.
Yeah, which was stupid. It was a really stupid scandal and should not have been nearly as big as it was. But it only was because they were as fascinated with him as they were. It was really dumb. I did not like it at the time. I thought it was stupid because, to be honest with you, it's none of our damn business. And honestly, I don't. Unless I'm trying to sleep with someone, I don't care who they're sleeping with. Unless I want to sleep with you, I don't care who you're sleeping with.
It had text messages. It had all kinds of details that, I mean, made your jaw drop in a lot of ways. That's why people were interested. But I, you know what? When you put it that way, you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
You're right. It was an affair. He had a bunch of affairs.
Yeah.
There were marital problems. There was, or maybe there weren't. I don't know. I mean, I guess there were because she left and that was that. But then there was a golf club to the back of the truck. But there were.
Yeah, the only person that committed a crime in that situation was the wife.
Yeah.
But say
I'm
what
not
you want.
Start throwing her under the bus.
No. But my point is
you'd
that
like to see people treat.
Everyone overreacted.
They did. You'd like to see people treat their spouses, I guess, with more respect. But like you said.
Sure.
It's
absolutely.
Not. It's really.
It's not my business.
Not our business.
It's not my business. What happens behind my closed doors, my business. Mark, what happens behind your closed doors, your business. I don't care. As long as it doesn't affect me.
Yeah.
On a personal level.
Like if we're not having shows that you don't know about and we don't tell you about and you have to call me pissed.
Yeah, because I have idiots calling me going, where were you? Why weren't you there? I'm like, what? What are you talking about? We didn't have a show. Did we?
So Tiger just had a long lag putt, beautiful lag putt, but it didn't go in. So he tapped in for par, I believe.
Tiger.
Molinari has a long birdie putt, but this is not likely to go in.
Good.
So through 9, he is minus 12. He is 1 under for the round, 1 back. But yeah, the scan. I mean, and the other thing is, and you don't want to start just throwing names out there, and you have no idea. How do you not know that this athlete you loved, who's married?
Yeah.
Wasn't doing the same stuff. Wasn't doing the same stuff, sleeping around, having affairs.
Most of them are.
Most of them are, and you don't know. Just because, so what, it's a lot better that this guy only had 6 affairs and Tiger had 13 or 15 or whatever it was?
Yeah.
I mean, who cares? I mean, it really doesn't matter. Most of them, again, I don't want to just start making mass declarations, but a lot of them are.
Well, we hear a lot of stories about different players in different sports having rats in different cities.
Yeah.
You know, they get to Minneapolis, they got some rat there that they can call up and she'll come to the room. I don't care. It's not my business.
Molinari, not a good putt. has a big one coming back for par. Tester, not a good putt. Was that Molinari?
I want Tiger to win.
Yeah, that was him. Not a good putt. So he has a long one coming back for par. If he misses, they'll be tied. So if he wins, this story will be, I mean, it'll be a huge story.
As it should be.
One of the biggest stories of the year, probably. If he wins the Masters.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to see a story bigger than that.
And he hasn't won a major for 11 years?
Yeah, 2008.
Whew.
Now, he's won. He won the 2013. People forget. He did win the 2013 Players Championship. Mm-hmm. That's a big-time tournament.
Yeah.
But still, a major.
It's not a major.
A major. And with the field and with this leaderboard at the Masters,
yeah,
that would be an enormous story. I mean, if he misses this putt, it's tied. Now, again, he was in the lead on the back nine of the Open Championship last year. So
against Molinari?
Yeah, Molinari won that tournament. So it's not like this is so unprecedented in the last few years. He's had the lead on the back nine of the final day of a major. But still, this is the Masters. He's looked great. And you got to give him credit, win or lose. I know it doesn't matter because he's Tiger Woods, but win or lose, this guy has established that he is back and he is amongst the best players now. He's right there with McIlroy. He's right there with Koepka, Dustin Johnson.
Good. The game's better for it.
Oh, of course it is. It's like when the Patriots had Darrell Revis. He made the whole his presence made the whole defense better because he's a cornerstone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
All right, so Game of Thrones premieres tonight. What? I've never seen an episode.
You've never watched an episode.
Why should I watch this show?
Devin, have you watched Game of Thrones?
I have not, and I don't care about the show.
Wow.
Well, then I don't care about you.
That's the nicest thing anyone has ever said to me.
No, you're welcome.
Here's a text. Tiger is a bad person. I've seen him personally how he treats other people.
Well, listen, I haven't seen that. Yeah. If I had seen that, I might feel the same way. I haven't witnessed it. I've heard my problem with that sometimes, you've actually witnessed it, so that's different. But just hearing the rumors doesn't do anything for me.
Molinari made the putt. He is a steely guy. I'm sorry.
I've worked with guys. I'll give you an example. I used to produce for Jay Severin up in Boston. And the scouting report I got before he got there was, he is a complete jerk to the producers. He's horrible to them. They hate him. He hates them. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. Well, when we worked together, couldn't have been nicer. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy to me. That's how I gauge it. That's how I judge it. Like, I had heard the rumors about him, but my interactions with him were always great. And that's how I'm going to, you know, base my feelings on him about is how we interacted with each other. I understand what the texter's point is saying, like, I saw him be a douche to these other people. That's different. You actually saw it. I'm only hearing it. You know what I mean? I'm only reading your text saying that. If I saw it with my own eyes, I might think differently. And I don't know, there's, you know, you saw him being a jerk to people. Well, what's the context? You know, I need more context than, he's a bad guy who's mean to some people.
Here, you can make a judgment based on this. And this isn't that big a deal, but here's something he does. When he meets with the media before tournaments, usually, especially not, I'm not talking the Masters, I'm talking about like the Deutsche Bank or mm-hmm. the Dell Championship in Boston. He doesn't do interviews in the workroom, in the media workroom, the standard press conference room. He does them outside standing up. Why? Because I think that makes things a little more difficult for the media, and it gives him an out if he wants to just walk off, if he's done, if he doesn't want to answer.
Yeah, it's a control situation.
Control situation.
Listen, I don't care how he treats the media, how he deals with the media. That's different. It's how he treats and deals with other people outside of that.
Okay.
You know, the fans of the sport, you know, everyday people. That's different. How you treat the media, I don't really give a damn because I get it.
I don't know if he watches Game of Thrones. Why should I watch Game of Thrones? I mean, everybody is going gaga over this
show. It's the final season, and everyone wants to see.
Oh, it's not going to be continued after this.
No, this is the final season.
Oh.
This is the final season, so everyone wants to see what the payoff is. Who will sit on the throne at the end. But here's why you should watch it. A lot of violence. Fun violence, yeah. No guns.
Is it knights? Is it like the knights in shining armor?
Basically,
I get into knights. I used to use Lego knights.
I did too. It like outside of this world, it would be like the Middle Ages.
Yeah,
like 1200
medieval.
Yeah, medieval
castles. Are there castles?
Yes, absolutely.
I like castles.
There's a little. My gripe would be that there's a little too much of the fantasy magic element to
it. What's the fantasy magic? Like wizards and sorcery.
A little bit of that sorcery stuff.
Like,
I'm not really
Potter.
Into that either.
No.
But it works within the confines of this story and the structure they've set up.
Okay.
But the characters are unbelievable. The dialogue, especially in the first couple of seasons, is phenomenal. If you're a guy, there's a lot of sex, a lot of naked ladies. Okay. If you're a lady, a couple naked guys. There's beautiful people everywhere.
Okay. Good-looking naked women and men.
Yes. Well, I can only remember one scene of a naked man, and it wasn't a good-looking man.
Okay.
With an obvious prosthetic on, which is amusing, to say the least. It's stunning. You get wrapped up in this story, and you just want to see how it concludes. I recommend. Binge it, if you can.
It was an hour episode?
Yeah, it usually floats between, like, 50 minutes, and sometimes it goes up to, like, an hour 10.
So Molinari is in the fairway coming off of that big par save. Tiger is in trouble off of the 10th tee. He drove it looked like into a bush, so we'll see.
He has experience doing that.
Red Sox, Orioles, David Price gets the ball today. Pre-game coming up next. Red Sox could use a win here. And, of course, game one of the Celtics about an hour away. Celtics, Pacers from TD Garden. We'll be back next week. We will have a show on Easter. So we'll talk to you then. We'll be able to make a few declarations by then. We'll know a lot more on the Bruins, the Celtics, and the Red Sox by next Sunday. Should be an interesting week here. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show. Dev, we appreciate it. 103.7 WEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.